ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Hare Krishna, so this morning we'll complete the fourth chapter of the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, starting from the verse number 40.
Samsara sindhum ati dustaram uti tirsar. Nanya plavo bhagavata purushottamasya. Lila kadhara sanishevanam ataneram. Pumso bhavet vividha dukha dava datisyam. Samsara sindhum ati dustaram uti tirsar. Nanya plavo bhagavata purushottamasya. Lila kadhara sanishevanam antareram. Umso bhavet vividha dukha davarditasyam.
Yeah.
samsara,
samsara
of material existence,
existence.
Sindhum,
the ocean,
atidustaram,
impossible to cross,
utitirsa,
for
one who desires to cross.
Na,
there is not.
Anya,
any other. Plava,
boat.
Bhagavata,
of
the personality of Godhead. Purushottamasya, the Supreme Lord. Lilakatha, of the narrations of the pastimes. Rasa, to the transcendental taste. Nishevanam,
the
rendering of
service.
Antarena,
apart from.
Pumsa,
for
a person.
Bhavet,
there can be.
Vividha,
various.
Dukha,
of material miseries.
Dava,
by the fire.
Arditasya,
who is distressed. Translation. For a person who is suffering in the fire of countless miseries and who desires to cross the insurmountable ocean of material existence, there is no suitable boat except that of cultivating devotion to the transcendental taste for the narrations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's pastimes. Purport. Although it is not possible to completely describe the pastimes of the Lord, even a partial appreciation can save one from the unbearable miseries of material existence. The fever of material existence can be removed only by the medicine of the holy name and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, which are perfectly narrated in Srimad Bhagavatam. Verse number 41. Long ago, this essential anthology of all the Puranas was spoken by the infallible Lord Naranarayana Rishi to Narada, who then repeated it to Krishna Dvaipayana Vedavyasa. Verse 42. My dear Maharaja Parikshit, that great personality, Srila Vyasadeva, taught me this same scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is equal in stature to the four Vedas. Verse 43. O best of the Kurus, the same Sutta Goswami who is sitting before us, will speak this Bhagavatam to the sages assembled in the great sacrifice at Naimisharanya. He will do when questioned by the members of the assembly headed by Shaunaka. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 12th canto, 4th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Four Categories of Universal Annihilation. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitamena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dhaneti Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Svinhupya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutalesh Mati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nikanamine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deshu Tarine. Once again, the verse. Samsara sindhum atidustaram utitirsur nanya plavo bhagavata purushottamasya lila kadhara sanichevanam antarena
Kum so bhavet vividha dukha davartitasya. For a person who is suffering in the fire of countless miseries and who desires to cross the insurmountable ocean of material existence, there is no suitable boat except that of cultivating devotion to the transcendental taste for the narrations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's pastimes. So here, Shukadeva Goswami is providing the medicine. Yesterday, we were discussing the activities of time and four stages of universal annihilation. And we discussed, you know, how it is uncomfortable for the spirit soul, which has eternal nature, to stay in this material world. But under the influence of illusory energy, living entity thinks it's all right, it's fine to tolerate and, you know, go through all those difficulties and miseries. After a few cycles in this material existence, in this samsara sindhu is an ocean of samsara, so repeated birth and death. After a few cycles, people start to understand that there should be something higher, and they start to look for that. And living entity is eternal by nature. You know, it's a sat, sat chit ananda. Sat means our eternal nature. And being sat, being eternal, we want that everything was stable around us, because the soul is stable, it's unmovable, it's unchanging. So we don't want things to change around us. So we are all looking for the stable situation, which is more or less possible maybe in Satya Yuga, when the mode of goodness is prominent. And the mode of goodness makes everything more or less stable. Now we are living in Kali Yuga, and the modes of passion and ignorance are most influential here. And we see that things are created, they don't last very long, then they are deteriorated. We see how things and situations are not very stable around us in every sphere of life: political, economical, cultural, ecological, religious, any you can take any sphere of life, and there is no stability in Kali Yuga because of these actions of passion and ignorance. And that's why living entity, being eternal, sooner or later comes to experience this so-called existential crisis, because, you know, this ever-changing material nature comes in very deep conflict with eternal nature of the soul. And it becomes a source of disturbance for the spirit living entity, spiritual living entity, and living entity starts to look for some solution. Material science offers some solutions. They promise that we'll make you immortal, we'll, you know, take care of all diseases like that, and there will be no more, the life will be much longer, while we'll eliminate all dangerous diseases, and, you know, situation will be more stable. And politicians also promise us that we'll make the situation much more stable, you'll have your rights, you know, we'll guarantee you everything. So they try to make the situation stable, but they don't understand where this instability comes from. It comes from the, our material desires, because modes, they just don't act on their own. They just help to fulfill our desires. As we know from the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is sitting in our hearts, and he knows all our desires. And he is trying to help us to execute our desires, engaging or using these different modes. And if desires are passionate and ignorant, they can be fulfilled only with the help of the modes of passion and ignorance. So it's not that, you know, just the Kali Yuga started and all of a sudden all these lower modes started to act. No. It's not like, you know, coming of winter when it's getting cold, and just, you know, without our desire for that. All these modes are acting only because we want them to act. We enjoy. We can complain about this life, but actually we want to go on with that, because otherwise, if people are not so much desirous to go on with this life, they could change.
They're complaining, but they don't change anything. Because actually they find some taste in it. They enjoy it. these lower modes, they can't provide any stability. That's why no political or economical measures, political steps, they can't do much. Because the very impetus for that action of these lower modes, it comes from our desires. And Krishna as Paramatma just arranges for the situation where our material desires and the mode of passion can be fulfilled with the help of these modes. So our very desires from inside, they make life unstable in Kali Yuga. And people don't understand that, all these mechanics, how modes act, how they just help externally to fulfill our internal desires. This existential crisis is inevitable for the living entity in the material world, and as I mentioned, we need some permanent solution for this problem. And Srimad Bhagavatam offers this solution. So it is clearly stated here that there is no, for a person who is suffering in the fire of countless miseries and who desires to cross the insurmountable ocean of material existence, there is no suitable boat except that of cultivating devotion to the transcendental taste for the narrations of the Supreme Lord's pastimes. There is a similar verse in Bhagavad Gita, Janma Karma Chami Divyami Vami Veti Tatvadaha Tyaktvadeha Punar Janma Naiti Mamati Surjuna. Krishna said that if you know the transcendental nature of my appearance and my activities, let's guarantee that you'll never get back to this material world, because you understand that my appearance here and my activities here are divya, transcendental, divine. So that's sufficient if we understand it in truth, tatvataha. Tatvataha means in truth, not just superficially, but when we realize it really. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a long narration which in all details describes all these transcendental aspects of Krishna, and even when Bhagavatam describes material world, Bhagavatam describes it in such a way that we see the connection between the creator and creation. So in this way, this link is provided, and we understand that things are happening here because the Lord is supervising this world, and the Lord provides and provides all the possibilities for fulfillment of all our desires. Material world in this verse is compared to the ocean, Sindhu. And transcendental world is also compared to the Sindhu. You know, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu means the ocean of transcendental rasa, which is produced from the nectar of devotional service. So, material world is an ocean of suffering, and the transcendental world is an ocean of bliss. So we have to choose. And we are marginal energy. We are staying in the middle, and we can choose. And to make a proper choice, we need a good association. And that's why Sri Guru Parampara provides us this, transcendental knowledge, which is like a favorable wind can help us to make a proper decision which ocean to choose, ocean of bliss or ocean of suffering. And to cross, and actually now we are not in the middle between them, now actually we are just inside the material ocean. And that's why if we are in the ocean struggling for existence, we need some stable boat. And in Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, Krishna said that there is a boat of transcendental knowledge, Jnana Plavena, Jnana Plavena. It's interesting that actually in Russian language there are many common roots with Sanskrit, and Plavena in Russian means, plavat means to swim. So Plavena means something which swims on the surface. So Jnana Plavena means knowledge which helps us to stay on the surface, not to drown, not to get drowned. This knowledge helps us to cross over this material ocean. And Srila Prabhupada once mentioned that both devotees and materialistic people, they are both in the ocean. But the difference is that devotees are on the boat And other people, they are just, you know, trying to struggle outside the boat. And both devotees and materialists, they also experience the influence of Sri modes of nature. Devotees also feel sometimes, you know, like lower modes are acting upon them. But again, their situation on the boat is much more safe and much more stable. That's a difference. Mm? And there is a captain on the boat. Mm? We know that Srila Prabhupada and, you know, other members of Sri Guru Parampara, they're acting like experienced captains who show the purpose, you know, our aim, where we should go. Mm? Because otherwise, we can just, even being on the boat, but if you don't have any aim, we can just, you know, go in circles here and there and, you know, don't come anywhere. Mm? So there should be captain who shows aim, and there should be a favorable wind, and Shastras, scriptures, they're acting as a favorable wind. And in this way, we have some chance to cross over this material ocean. And there is another statement in the Shastras that for those people who are practicing devotional service, this material ocean, it becomes much smaller. It just turns into a little puddle. And it's very easy just to cross over the puddle. Hmm? It's impossible to cross over the ocean. But, you know, when it turns into some small puddle, it's not difficult to do. We have some experience when we fly on the plane. Hmm? When we just, you know, take off, things on the ground, they become smaller, smaller, and smaller, you know. The big houses, they just turn into some small boxes, and people become like a little ants crawling around. So as we go higher, and things become smaller. So in a similar way, when our consciousness becomes more elevated and we look from above through the eyes of Shastras, through the scriptures, Jnana Chakshu, that's the eyes of Shastras, then we see things in proper perspective. Mm? We see that these material things are not actually very important. Because, you know, we know about Krishna, we know about our future, about spiritual world. Mm? Devotees have this clear purpose. For them, this ocean becomes like a little puddle. Mm? And another thing is that to get a real result, we have to really become absorbed in the spiritual life. When we are under the influence of material modes of passion and ignorance, there are so many external factors that distract us. Especially when the person is young and have some material desires, which is quite natural for the young age. And Krishna gives some chance for that. He gives Grihastha for 20, 30 years. Okay, there is a chance. You can try to fulfill your desires, your ambitions. You can make your career. You can have your family. You can do what you like, but please don't forget about Krishna. Hmm? That's why the first ashram is brahmacharya. And brahmacharya means you learn something. Hmm? And when you get some spiritual knowledge, if you learn it by heart, maybe you don't have a deep realization because, you know, children, they don't have much experience, but still, you know, they already take this knowledge and they remember it because, you know, in school we have to study, we have to repeat it again and again. But when these children become more mature, naturally, you know, these passionate desires start to manifest themselves in their hearts, and they become more distracted by this material desire. So Krishna says, okay, you can enter Grihastha Ashram and try to, you know, fulfill your plans. But since you've gone through Brahmacharya Ashram, you got some idea, at least theoretical. So what is austerity, what is renunciation, what is knowledge? And then it's after Grihastha Ashram is over, when kids are grown up and we retire, then we have much more time and less distraction. That's an ideal situation. So that's why it's recommended to do things in proper time. You have to marry in proper time so that you can complete your Grihastha Ashram in proper time. If some delays happen, then, you know, difficulties also happen. When we practice devotional service, being grihasthas, as I mentioned, we are very much distracted by different factors. We have to job, we have to take care of our family members, we have to make money. Sometimes we don't have time, you know, to chant our japa just, you know, sitting in front of the deity, so we have to do it just driving. And of course, when we chant Hare Krishna mantra, not in a very perfect situation, we can't expect much progress. So if you really want to experience some spiritual taste, then we have to completely go deep into the process. And while the person is still young and distracted by his material duties, it's not so easy to do. So it's difficult to expect that those who are in Grihastha Ashram can progress very quickly. More or less, they can maintain some level of spiritual life. But when the time comes, Krishna gives us some, you know, signal, some sign that, you know, it's time to stop and you have to, you know, change to some other ashram, take vanaprastha, and become more internally and externally renounced, live a more more simple life, then you have to take the sign. Like in the life of Srila Prabhupada, he was a businessman, he was a family man. But then one day we know that his good wife traded his Srimad Bhagavatam for some tea or some cookies for something. And we may condemn her for that. Actually, we should be thankful to her because, you know, that was a sign for Srila Prabhupada. Okay, that's it. It's time to go. So that's why he changed his life and he moved to Vrindavan and he started his preparation for traveling abroad and for this ISKCON mission. We may say that, you know, his wife didn't act properly, but actually she also acted as a tool, as an instrument in the hands of Krishna, just to give Srila Prabhupada a sign, you know, that's it, finished. Another page of your life should start. And Manu Samhita says that when your hair turns gray, you know, when your teeth start to fall out, when you see, when you hear the first cry of your newborn, a grandson or granddaughter, that's a sign that you have to stop and go and try another page of your life, spiritual. You have to start a spiritual activity. So there are natural indications what period is now and what period is over and what should go next. So there are natural things, and Krishna gives us these signals, these warnings that, you know, if you really want to go back to me, you have to get real serious, to seriously, you know, go deep into the process, into chanting, studying, meditating, praying, like that. And it's very difficult to do when you are engaged in so many other external activities which, you know, distract us, distract our attention. And all devotees are chanting, but we can say that they are chanting with a different degree of concentration. So what ruins our concentration? Material desires, material activities, different factors. So that's why in due course of time, we have to minimize our material standards, we have to minimize our material needs, and in this way, find some more or less peaceful place, and a peaceful place with less distraction, we have to have more concentration. And in this way, there is a chance that the quality of our chanting, quality of our reading, quality of our meditation will improve. Otherwise, there's no much hope for that. That's why Krishna may arrange some circumstances, like in the life of Maharaja Parikshit. All of a sudden, I mean, he was a prosperous king, relatively young, full of strength and power, but then, all of a sudden, he comes to know that he has only 7 days to live. What to do? And in such a situation, it's quite natural that he reevaluated his values and, you know, whatever was primary, his activities, you know, it became secondary. And our spiritual life may be like a background, it's like a secondary thing for those who are materially very much active, engaged, then all of a sudden spiritual life comes first, it becomes the first priority. And sometimes we have to make the step and change our priorities under the pressure, under the power of some situations which may not be pleasant at all. And a person can be diagnosed with some, terrible disease or something like that. And he can come to realize that, there's not much time to go. And although it's not very pleasant for our senses and the mind, it's actually very good for the soul. Because there is no more time just to fool around. So you just have to concentrate yourself and fully, go to the into the deep our self and the process of devotional service. We tend to postpone things, especially when we are young. Okay, the soul is eternal, Krishna is eternal. Well, he can wait, and we have very urgent things to do here. But then, after a while, when we find ourselves that we are much older and we have some troubles and there's no more hope for us in this material activity, then this time which remains, it creates the sense of urgency, which is not very pleasant, but it's needed. Because otherwise, ourselves, we just, as I mentioned, tend to postpone things. And Krishna wants to somehow inspire us or stimulate us, and that's why he can create some situations where we understand there is no more time for other things, only Krishna. And in this way, spiritually perfect situation is created, which may not look perfect materially. And as Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita 2.41, Vyavasyatmika buddhi keha kurunandana bahusha kahi anantascha buddhaya vyavasayana. Those who have only one purpose, they are very determined. And those people who have many desires, their desires are many branched. They don't have enough resolution, determination to go deeply into the process. So this concentration is required, and to get this concentration, some circumstances are required. And if you don't create the circumstances ourselves because of our foolishness, then Krishna can help. He can arrange for that, and then we don't have any other choice. So in this way, we can get some deeper experience of spiritual life. And what else? Also, in these verses, Shukadeva Goswami states that Srimad Bhagavatam is equal in stature to the four Vedas. Sometimes we hear some accusations from some scientists or those people who study Sanskrit, study Vedas, like academic academic studies. They say that, actually Srimad Bhagavatam is just a Purana, and Purana is secondary like that. It's like, it's just a supplementary to four Vedas, and four Vedas, it's like a main thing. But we hear that Shukadeva Goswami makes a different statement. He says, yes, while it's a supplementary, maybe it was told a bit later than four Vedas. Actually, it's not like that. Actually, we know that Srimad Bhagavatam was told by Krishna to Brahma in the very beginning of creation, in the form of four verses, Chatur Shloka, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chatur Shloka, and later on it was expanded like a seed, seed grows. And this Om, from Om comes Gayatri, from Gayatri comes four Vedas. And Srimad Bhagavatam is like a ripened fruit. Galitam bhalam. Galitam means Vedas, bhalam means fruit. So it's a ripened fruit of all Vedas. And how can we prove that Srimad Bhagavatam is equal to four Vedas, or maybe even better than that? We can analyze it from the point of view of different purposes. Like the biggest part of the Vedas is Karmakanda. It's a pious way to fulfill our material desires. So mostly people, even pious people in this material world, they have some material desires, they are materialistic by nature. And that's why Vedas are like a desire tree. Vedas help us to fulfill our desires. So it's a majority of mantras in the Vedas, they provide us, you know, some solutions for our material problems, how to increase our level of comfort and material enjoyment. Then the next purpose of Vedas is jnana. For those people who become disappointed in the material enjoyment, because it's very shallow, actually. It's very superficial. It doesn't give a very deep taste to the soul. And those people, they start to search for this, you know, Brahman, Jnanakanda. And those people who are lucky enough to understand that the effulgence of Brahman comes from the personality of Godhead, they become bhaktas, devotees. Mm? So Srimad Bhagavatam takes care of those who have become devotees. So we can say that if you analyze different Vedic scriptures in terms of purposes, then Srimad Bhagavatam is dealing with a higher purpose. So in this sense, it's not only equal to four Vedas, it's actually much higher than four Vedas. Mm? But if you just, you know, discuss this topic in terms of academical arguments, you know, what historically appeared first, what is considered to be real Vedas or just supplementary, then you can come to some different conclusion. But this kind of discussions are outside of tradition. But if you discuss the same topic from inside of tradition, then you can come to completely different conclusions, like what Sukadeva Goswami states here, that Srimad Bhagavatam is equal to four Vedas. And the last thing Sukadeva Goswami mentions here is that he is acting as a prophet. He gives prediction that in the future, Suta Goswami, who is sitting in the same audience and who is listening to Sukadeva Goswami, he will tell this same Srimad Bhagavatam to the sages of forest of Nainisharanya, headed by the sage Shaunaka Rishi. Hmm? So the future of Srimad Bhagavatam is foretold here, and we are actually following the same tradition. Hmm? We are also telling this Srimad Bhagavatam within the line of Sri Guru Parampara, it was as it was given to us. So the tradition of Srimad Bhagavatam goes on, and we see that actually Krishna arranged in such a way that Srimad Bhagavatam in Kali Yuga is distributed very widely. We don't see so much distribution of Rig Veda, Samaveda, Yajur Veda, Atharva Veda, because they are of no use. Mm? Only some, you know, ritualistic brahmanas can chant them properly, can, you know, do all these rituals like that. So we can say that in Kali Yuga, Srimad Bhagavatam is much more practical. And that's why Krishna arranged it in such a way that Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are distributed widely, because they are much more practical, and they contain the very essence of Vedic scriptures and Vedic culture. So in this way, this narration of Srimad Bhagavatam came to us, and hopefully we'll pass it to the next generation. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Any questions? Discussions? Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu. You mentioned that it's one thing to theoretically understand the nature of Krishna's appearance, his divine appearance, and it's another thing to realize it. You know, I've been thinking it's been challenging to even understand theoretically what we need to understand in order to never come back into this material world in that statement of his appearance. But what would realizing that look like?
I can't say that I fully realize that, but you know, I have some understanding to what it may mean.
In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 10, Krishna states, Tisham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami bhutyogam tam enamamu payantite. To those who are engaged in the pure devotional service unto me, I give understanding by which they can come to me. So this buddhi yogam tam, so Krishna gives this understanding, and he gives it only when we do some seva, some service. So there is theoretical jnana, and everybody can hear it, everybody can read it. And but what makes jnana, what turns jnana into vijnana, service, seva? So when we hear something, and then when we apply it into practice, it's like digestion. You can take some food, but then it's just one stage is over, then another stage, digestion. So for that you need some fire of digestion. Otherwise, if the food is in the stomach, but you can't digest it, it turns into toxins, ama. Ama. And ama literally means not my. Ma means my. Ama means not mine. Something foreign which comes to the body. And ama produces amayu. Amayu means disease. So if you take some food, but you don't digest it due to the lack of fire of digestion, then it turns into poison. And that's why to turn jnana into vijnana, theoretical knowledge into practical knowledge, we require some practical seva, practical service. And that ingredient, it acts as a fire of digestion. And in this way, you know, this realization of vijnana just dawns upon us. It's coming from Krishna. It's not just some mechanical process. It's my understanding.
Thank you, thank you. Very nice.
Hare Bhopo, very nice class. So when I read the text where it states that Srimad Bhagavatam is equal to the Vedas, the question came to mind how Lord Krishna was demoting the Vedas in some way. He was saying, don't get caught up with the flowery words of the Vedas. They deal with the three modes of material nature. Then it promotes demigod worship and, you know, so many different things really. So like you're right, in one sense the Srimad Bhagavatam is even above the Vedas, you know, because it gives us the direct essence of what we need to know.
Yeah, right. And Krishna says, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nish Trigunya Balarjuna. You have to reject all these Vedas because they just deal with three modes. And the purpose is to go much higher than that. And then again, in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Vidaischa sarvari aham eva vidyo." The purpose of all Vedas is to know me. So Srimad Bhagavatam is directly dealing with Krishna. That's why it's actually much higher than four Vedas. Anything else?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you very much for coming all this way to enlighten us. You mentioned the Grihastha Ashram. It's like some 30 years. And it's kind of like, so my question is how, you say you can't dive that deep because so many distractions. But the world is full of Grihasthas. And 30 years is a long time. So how can we dive deeper while in that ashram question?
How can we dive deeper in the Krishna consciousness while we're in this ashram? There should be some discipline. We all have 24 hours every day. And it depends on us. How do we divide this time? We can allocate some time, you know, for spiritual practice, as Srila Prabhupada taught us, especially morning time. I remember there is some quote from Srila Prabhupada, and he said that if you are not determined enough to get up early in the morning, you can't hope you know, for some deep spiritual realization.
Because morning time is a time of sattva-gun, mode of goodness, which gives us like a natural facility, a natural advantage of the mode of goodness, which provides more concentration, more tranquility in the mind. Mm? So, and grihasthas, as much as I know, they tend to go to bed quite late for different reasons. And that's why it's quite difficult for them to get up early in the morning. It's like a vicious circle, you know, and it's very difficult to get out of it. Hmm? There are, as we know, four different purposes: dharma, ardha, kama, and moksha. Hmm? And dharma comes first. It's a foundation of the whole pyramid. Dharma is the foundation. Then comes artha, then comes kama, fulfillment of our desires, and then moksha. And how come this kama can turn into moksha? Hmm? Only if it is based on dharma, if the foundation is right. So my understanding is that we can find more time, more concentration, and even just being in the middle of this artha kama, which is actually the purpose of Grihastha Ashram, to get this artha in kama. Well, if everything is based, again, on dharma, then, you know, this tendency of moksha, I don't speak about impersonal moksha, I'm speaking about moksha in a sense like a natural renunciation, a natural tendency to go deeper into spiritual life. In this sense, I speak about moksha. So this tendency will be automatically there if we are doing our dharma. And apart from our material duties, material dharma, we know that there is this sanatana dharma, which starts from this morning program. Of course, you know, all people are different, and they have their own bodies, some necessities of health like that. But in principle, if you find time to chant our japa, not while driving, but, you know, peacefully sitting in a clean place, preferably in front of the deity, or maybe in the temple, or at home, or in some sattvic environment, then it gives us much more chances to feel this taste. Of course, we can complete our rounds even, you know, while driving the car, but this is not the way to develop some higher taste. So we can mechanically do it, we can complete it, but it's not the right way to develop taste. Hmm? Like, we can say that there is a deity. Deity is transcendental, right? But it is established, it is installed on the altar. And the altar, although it is considered material, it should be spotlessly clean. So we can say that an altar is like a mode of goodness. And the deity is a transcendental entity. So transcendental entity can fully manifest himself only in the mode of goodness. That's why our worship of the deities requires so much cleanliness. Hmm? We don't just put the deities in some dirty place full of passion and ignorance, right? So altar should be spotlessly clean, sattvic. Hmm? That's why, you know, pujaris, assistants, every day they clean it. Hmm? So in a similar way, if you want a transcendental Lord to manifest in our heart, it should be sattvic. Okay? Not passionate and ignorant. And what are 10 sources of sattva guna? Srimad Bhagavatam 11 and the 11 Kanta states that all the gunas, they have their sources. And it lists 10 sources of sattva guna. Hmm? And, well, we don't have much time to list them all. At least water, food, circumstances, activities. Yeah, one second. And like that. So, if we invite the mode of ignorance, I mean, sorry, yeah, the mode of goodness in our life, then it's much easier for Krishna to manifest in our life. Like deity becomes manifested only on the spotlessly clean altar, like that. So it's up to us to make arrangement in our life in such a way so that we practice our sadhana, our spiritual life in a sattvic environment. In this way, there is much more chances to have some spiritual experience and become more or less stable on this level. That's my understanding. Mm.
Yeah.
Question. I guess it's sort of a comment. Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, I think his seminar on faith and knowledge, he's suggesting that that where we place our faith is an act of buddhi, an act of intelligence. So all this annihilation, this constant annihilation that's going on, is not in itself enough to make us rise to the occasion of Ante Narayana Smriti, remembering Krishna at the time of death. We have to be, what they say in modern language, you have to be proactive and actually make a decision. It could be related to the analogy of the wedding party, that they leave the anchor stuck, and then even though the effort is being made, but the progress isn't there. It also could be related to Bhagavad Gita 269, like a fundamental paradigm shift. The verse doesn't exactly point to bhakti, but it points to this basic idea that instead of sense gratification, then there's another kind of personality who's looking for self-realization. So it goes very, very deep, and we all have to do some soul searching, and better late than never, to develop this determination that I'm going to change my where I'm taking shelter of, where I'm placing my faith. And that way it won't be like rowing the boat and not getting anywhere. Is that okay?
Yeah, thank you very much. Nice addition. Okay, I have 2 more minutes. Last question, okay.
Can I comment on the Gargamuni Prabhu's
question? Yeah.
You know, he talks about extended time in Grihastha Ashram, as what you were talking about, you know, having timeline, one should be conscious when to, you know, when to change chapters. I personally see it as a mixed forum of discussion, in that sometimes if we mix it with Varnashram Dharma, or sometimes in Grihastha life, we also mix the processes of devotional service and karmakanda. And as such, there are examples of where one in the Grihastha ashram may be extended and don't go anywhere, whilst there are examples of others who can make a lot of progress. So in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada made some comments there that in some of his purports, that some grihasthas, and he talked about members of his movement, that they engage so nicely in devotional service that they are good as sannyasis. And because the practice, if one takes the practice, then with all grihastha ashram is so distracting per se, then but if the practice is there, then one can, in other words, one don't need to leave Grihastha ashram, as long as one's mentality is not one of a Griha mentality, but one of keeps Krishna in the center, then those things can be there. So they're all like different sides of that discussion. Like in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, 6:15, in that purport, Srila Prabhupada said that only in the bhakti school is pretty much like Grihastha life is allowed. Any other processes, because it's so difficult to make advancement, but in a bhakti school, even Grihastha ashram, devotees can make, you know, a lot of progress in spiritual life. So depends on how we take it. If we take it as a compromise, or we take it as an opportunity. And so then, you know, there are all different angles. I just want to share that.
Everything depends on the approach, you know, how we take it, as you mentioned. Is it a way to enjoy, or the way to progress? So there is always a rule, and there is always some exceptions. Okay, so we can end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.